non-essential, like leadership. This is why, someone else shouts him down, fucking Raga! Someone else shouts her down, fucking listen, it's Ika! Who the Rust cares about another Raga monster? Rusty son of a cannibal, I will beat you bloody if you... Someone shoves someone else. There are shoves back, more curses, vows of murder. It's a catastrophe. Then a man rushes forward from the crowd, crouching beside the iced corpse and trying his best to fling his arms around it. The resemblance between him and the body is obvious even through the ice. Brothers, perhaps. His wail of anguish causes a sudden flustered silence to ripple across the crowd. They shuffle uneasily as his wail subsides into deep, soul-tearing sobs. Yika takes a deep breath and steps forward, using the opportunity that grief has provided. To Cutter, she says tightly, what did I say? What did I, Rusting, say? He attacked me, Cutter says. There's not a scratch on him. Bullshit, Yika says. Several people in the crowd echo her, but she glares them down until they subside. She looks at the dead man, her jaw tight. Bettine wouldn't have done that. He couldn't even kill a chicken that time. It was his turn to look after the flock. Cutter glares. All I know is I wanted to take a bath. I sat down to wash and he moved away from me. I figured, fine, that's how it's going to be, and I didn't care. Then I went past him to get into the pool and he hit me. Hard, in the back of the neck. There is a low, angry murmur at this, but also a troubled shuffle. The back of the neck is rumored to be the best place to strike a Raga. It's not true. Only works if you hit hard enough for a concussion or a cracked skull, and then that's what takes them down, not any sort of damage to the Sisipine. It's still a popular myth, and if it's true, it might be reason enough for Cutter to fight back. Rust that! This is growled, the man who holds Bettine's faintly hissing corpse. Betts wasn't like that. Yeek, you know, he wasn't. Yika nods, going over to touch the man's shoulder. The crowd shuffles again, pent fury shifting with it, with her, tenuously, for the moment. I know. A muscle in her jaw flexes once, twice. She looks around. Anybody else see the fight? Several people raise hands. I saw Betts move away, says one woman. She swallows, looking at Cutter. Sweat dots her upper lip. I think he wanted to get closer to the soap, though. He looked at me, Cutter snaps. I know what it rusting means when somebody looks at me like that. Yika cuts him off with a wave of her hand. I know, Cutter, but shut up. What else? She asks the woman. That was it. I looked away, and then when I looked back, there was that swirl. Wind and ice. She grimaces, her jaw tightening. You know how you people kill. Yika glares back at her, but then flinches as there are more shouts, this time in agreement with the woman. Someone tries to shove through the crowd to get at Cutter. Someone else holds the attacker back, but it's a near thing. You see the realization come over Yika that she's losing them. She's not going to make her people see. They're working themselves into a mob, and there's nothing she can do to stop them. Well, you're wrong about that. There's one thing she can do. She does it by turning and laying a hand on Cutter's chest and sending something through him. You're not actively sessing at the moment, so you only get the backwash of it. And it's... what? It's like the way Alabaster once slammed a hotspot into submission years ago, and a fifth of a continent away, just smaller. It's like what that Guardian did to Inan, except localized and not overtly horrific. And you didn't realize Ragas could do anything like it. Whatever it is, Cutter doesn't even have a chance to gasp. His eyes fly wide, he staggers back a step. Then he falls down with a look of shock on his face to match that of Bettine's fear. Everyone's silent. Yours is not the only mouth that hangs open. Yika catches her breath. Whatever she did, took a lot out of her. You see her sway a little, then get a hold of herself.
That's enough,
she says, turning to look at everyone in the crowd.
More than enough. Justice has been done, see? Now all of you, go the rest home.
You don't expect that to work. You figure it'll only whet the crowd's bloodthirst. But shows how much you know. People mill a little, mutter a little, but then they begin to disperse. A grieving man's quiet sobs follow them all away.
That's midnight, the timekeeper calls.
8 hours, till the vote in the morning.
I had to do it, Yika murmurs.
You're in her apartment again, sort of, standing beside her. The curtains open so she can see her people, so they can see her. But she's leaning against the door sill and she's trembling. It's only a little. No one would see it from afar.
I had to.
You offer her the respect of honesty. Yes, you did. It's 2 o'clock. By 5 o'clock, you're thinking about sleeping. It's been quieter than you expected. Lerna and Hjarka have come to join you at Yika's. No one says you're keeping vigil, commiserating in silence, mourning Cutter, waiting for the world to end again. But that's what you're doing. Yika's sitting on a divan with her arms wrapped around her knees and her head propped against the wall, gaze weary and empty of thought. When you hear shouts again, you close your eyes and think about ignoring them. It's the high-pitched screams of children that drag you out of this complete failure of empathy. The others get up and you do too, and all of you go out onto the balcony. People are running toward one of the wide platforms that surround a crystal shaft, too small to hold any apartments. You and the others head that way too. The Calm uses such platforms for storage, so this one is stacked with barrels and crates and clay jars. One of the clay jars is rolling around, but looks intact. You see this as you and the others reach the platform, which does not at all explain what else you're seeing. It's the Raga kids again, Penty's gang. Two of them are doing all the screaming, tugging and hitting at a woman who has pinned Penty down and is shouting at her, gripping her throat. Another woman stands by, yelling at the kids too, but no one's paying any attention to her. Her slurred voice is just the goad. You know the woman that's got Penty down, sort of. She's maybe 10 years younger than you, with a heavier build and longer hair. Wyneen, one of the resistance. She's been nice enough when you've done shifts in the fungus flats or latrines, but you've heard the others gossip behind her back. Wyneen makes the mellows that Lerna periodically smokes, and the moonshine that a few people in the Calm drink. Sometime back before the season, she had quite a lucrative sideline, helping the native Kostreamans perk up their lives of tedious mining and trading. And she stored the product down in Kostrema Under to keep the Courtant tax inspectors from ever finding it. Convenient, now that the world has ended. But she's her own biggest customer, and it's not unusual to find her stumbling about the Calm, red-faced and too loud, emitting more fumes than a fresh blow. Wyneen's not usually a mean drunk, and she shares freely, and she never misses a shift, which is why nobody really cares what she does with her stuff. Everybody handles the season in their own way. Still, some things set her off now. Penty is aggravating. Hjarka and some of the other Kostreamans are striding forward to pull the woman off the girl, and you're telling yourself it's a good thing Penty has enough self-control to not ice the whole damned platform when the woman lifts an arm and makes a fist. A fist that... You've seen the imprint of Jija's fist, a bruise with 4 parallel marks on Uche's belly and face. A fist that... That... No. You're in the topaz and between the woman's cells in almost the same instant. There is no thought in this. Your mind falls, dives, into the upward wash of yellow light as if it belongs there.
Your sesapine flex around the silver threads, and you draw them together. You are part of both obelisk and woman, and you will not let this happen. Not again, not again. You could not stop Jija, but not one more child, you whisper. And your companions all look at you in surprise and confusion. Then they stop looking at you, because the woman who was egging on the fight is suddenly screaming, and the kids are screaming louder. Even Penty is screaming now, because the woman on top of her has turned to glittering, multicolored stone. Not one more child! You can sense the ones nearest you, the other council members, the screaming drunk, Penty and her girls, Hjorka and the rest, all of them, everyone in Kastrima. They trod upon the filaments of your nerves, tapping and jittering, and they are Jija. You focus on the drunk woman, and it is almost instinctual, the urge to begin squeezing the movement and life out of her, and replacing that with whatever the byproduct of magical reactions really is. This stuff that looks like stone. This stuff that is killing Alabaster, the father of your other dead child. Not one more rusting child. For how many centuries has the world killed Raga children so that everyone else's children can sleep easy? Everyone is Jija. The whole damn world is Shafa. Kastrima is Tarimo is the fulcrum, not one more. And you turn with the obelisk, torrenting its power through you to begin killing everyone within and beyond your sight. Something jars your connection to the obelisk. Suddenly you have to fight for power that it so readily gave you before. You bare your teeth without thinking, growl without hearing yourself, clench your fists and shout in your mind, "No! I won't let him do it again!" And you are seeing Shafa, thinking of Jija. But you are assessing Alabaster, feeling him in blazing white tendrils that lash at your obelisk link. That is Alabaster's strength contending against yours and not winning. He does not shut you down the way you know he can, or the way you thought he could. Is he weaker? No. You're just a lot stronger than you used to be. And suddenly the import of this slaps through the fugue of memory and horror that you're trapped in, bringing you back to cold, shocking reality. You've killed a woman with magic. You're about to wipe out Kastrima with magic. You're fighting Alabaster with magic, and Alabaster cannot bear more magic. Oh, and caring Earth, you whisper. You stop fighting at once. Alabaster dismantles your connection to the obelisk. He's still got a more precise touch than you. But you feel his weakness when he does so, his fading strength. You are not even aware of running at first. It barely qualifies as running, because the contest of magic and the abrupt discontinuation from the obelisk have left you so disoriented and weak that you lurch from railing to rope as if drunk yourself. Someone shouting in your ear. A hand grabs your upper arm and you shake it off, snarling. Somehow you make it to the ground floor without falling to your death. Faces blur past you, irrelevant. You can't see because you're sobbing aloud, babbling, "No, no, no." You know what you've done, even as you deny it with your words and body and soul. Then you are in the infirmary. You are in the infirmary looking down at an incongruously small, yet finely made stone sculpture. No color to this one, no polish. Just dull sandy brown all over. It is almost abstract, archetypal. Man in his final moment. Truncation of the spirit. Never person, unperson. Once found, but now lost. Or maybe you can just call it Alabaster. It's 5:30. At 7 o'clock, Lerna comes to where you huddle on the floor in front of Alabaster's corpse. You barely hear him settle nearby, and you wonder why he's come. He knows better. He should go before you snap again and kill him too.
Yiga's talked the calm into not killing you, he says. I told them about your son. It's been, mutually agreed that Wainin could have killed Penti, hitting her like that. Your overreaction was understandable. He pauses. It helps that Yiga killed Cutter earlier. They trust her more now. They know she's not speaking for you just out of... He inhales, shrugs. Kinship. Yes. It's as the teachers told you back in the fulcrum. Ragas are one and the same. The crimes of any are the crimes of all.
No one will kill her.
That's Hoa. Of course, he's here now, guarding his investment. Lerna shifts uneasily at this, but then another voice agrees. No one will kill her. And you flinch, because it is antimony. You push yourself up from the huddle, slowly. She sits in the same position, as always. She's been here all along, with the stone lump that was alabaster resting against her as his living body once did. Her eyes are already on you. You can't have him, you say, snarl. Or me either. I don't want you, Antimony says. You killed him. Oh, shit. You try to maintain abject fury. Try to use it to focus and reach for the power to defy her. But the fury dissolves into shame. And anyway, you only get as far as that damned obelisk long knife of alabasters, the spinal. It kicks back your flailing grab for it almost at once, as if spitting in your face. You are worthy of contempt, aren't you? The stone eaters, the humans, the orogens, even the flaking obelisks all know it. You are nothing. No, you are death. And you've killed yet another person you loved. So you sit there on your hands and knees, bereft, rejected, so hurt that it is like a clockwork engine of pain, gear ticking at the core of you. Maybe the obelisk builders could have invented some way to harness pain like this. But they are all dead. There is a sound that drags you out of grief. Antimony is standing now. Her pose is imposing, straight-legged and implacable. She looks down her nose at you. In her arms is the brown lump of alabaster's remains. From this angle, it doesn't look like anything that used to be human. Officially, it wasn't. No, you say. No defiance this time. It is a plea. Don't take him. Yet this is what he asked for. This is what he wanted. To be given to Antimony and not Father Earth, who took so much from him. That's the choice here. Earth or a stone eater. You're not on the list. He left you a message, she says. Her inflectionless voice is no different. And yet, somehow, is that pity? The onyx is the key. First a network, then the gate. Don't rust it up, Esun. Inan and I didn't love you for nothing. What? You ask. But then she flickers, becoming translucent. For the first time, it occurs to you that the way stone eaters move through rock and the way obelisks shift between real and unreal states are the same. It is a useless observation. Antimony vanishes into the earth that hates you, with alabaster. You sit where she's left you, where he's left you. There are no thoughts in your head. But when a hand touches your arm, and a voice says your name, and a connection that is not the obelisk presents itself, you turn toward it. You can't help it. You need something, and if it is not to be family or death, then it must be something else. So you turn and grab, and Lerna is there for you. His shoulder is warm and soft, and you need it. You need him. Just for now, please. Just once. You need to feel human, never mind the official designations, and maybe with human arms around you and a human voice murmuring, I'm sorry, Esun, in your ear. Maybe you can feel like that. Maybe you are human just for a little while.
At 7:45, you sit alone again. Lerna's gone to speak to one of his assistants, and maybe to the strongbacks who are watching you from the infirmary doorway. At the bottom of your runny sack is a pocket for hiding things. It's why you bought this particular runny sack years ago, from this particular leather worker. When he showed you the pocket, you thought immediately of something that you wanted to put in it. Something that, as Esun, you didn't let yourself think about often, because it was a thing of Cyanites, and she was dead. Yet you kept her remains. You dig through the sack until your fingers find the pocket and wriggle inside. The bundle is still there. You tug them out, unfold the cheap linen. 6 rings, polished and semi-precious, sit there. Not enough for you, a 9-ringer, but you don't care about the first 4 anyway. They clack and roll across the floor as you discard them. The last 2, the ones he made for you, you put on the index finger of each hand. Then you get to your feet. 8:00. Representatives of the comms households gather at the flat top. 1 vote per comms share is the rule. You see Yika at the center of the circle again, her arms folded and face carefully blank, though you can sense an undertone of tension in the ambient that is mostly hers. Someone has brought out an old wooden box, and people are milling around, talking to each other, writing on scraps of paper or leather, dropping these into the box. You walk toward the flat top with Lerna in tow. People don't notice you until you're nearly across the bridge, nearly on top of them. Then someone sees you coming and gasps loudly. Someone else yelps in alarm. Oh, Rust, it's her! People scramble to get out of your way, almost tripping over themselves. They should. In your right hand is Alabaster's ridiculous pink long knife, the miniaturized and reshaped spinal obelisk. By now you have tapped it, resonated with it. It is yours. It rejected you before because you were unstable, floundering. But now you know what you need from it. You've found your focus. The spinal won't hurt anyone as long as you don't let it. Whether you will or not is an entirely different matter. You walk into the center of the circle, and the man holding the ballot box scrambles back from you, leaving it there. Yika frowns and steps forward and says, Esun. But you ignore her. You lunge forward, and it is suddenly instinctual, easy, natural, to grip the hilt of the pink long knife with both hands and turn and swivel your hips and swing. The instant the sword touches the wooden box, the box is obliterated. It isn't cut, it isn't smashed. It disintegrates into its component, microscopic particles. The eye processes this as dust, which scatters and glitters in the light before vanishing, turned to stone. A lot of people are gasping or crying out, which means they're inhaling their votes. Probably won't hurt them much. Then you turn and lift the long knife, pivoting slowly to point it at each face. No vote, you say. It's so quiet that you can hear water trickling out of the pipes in the communal pool hundreds of feet below. Leave. Go join Renanus if they'll have you. But if you stay, no part of this comm gets to decide that any other part of this comm is expendable. No voting on who gets to be people. Some of them shuffle or look at each other. Yika stares at you like you are a possibly dangerous creature, which is hilarious. She should know by now that there's no possibly about it. Esun, she starts to say, in the kind of even voice one uses with pets or the mad. This is... She stops because she doesn't know what it is. But you do.
It's a fucking coup. Doesn't matter who's in charge, but on this one issue, you're going to be the dictator. You will not allow Alabaster to have died saving these people from you for nothing. No vote, you say again. Your voice is pitched to Carrie, as if they are 12-year-olds in your old creche. This is a community. You will be unified. You will fight for each other. Or I will rust and kill every last one of you. True silence this time. They don't move. Their eyes are white and so far beyond frightened that you know they believe you. Good. You turn and walk away. Interlude. In the turning depths, I resonate with my enemy. Or attempt to. A truce, I say. Plead. There has been so much loss already. On all sides. A moon, a future, hope. Down here, it's nearly impossible to hear a reply in words. What comes to me is furious reverberation. Savage fluctuations of pressure and gravitation. I'm forced to flee after a time, lest I be crushed. And though this would be only a temporary setback, I cannot afford to be incapacitated right now. Things are changing amid your kind. Quickly as your kind so often do things, when you finally make real decisions, I have to be ready. The rage was my only answer. In any case. 19. You get ready to rumble. It has been 1 month since you last went above ground. It has been 2 days since you killed Alabaster in your folly and pain. All things change in a season. Kastrima Over is occupied. The tunnel that you first passed through to enter the calm is blocked. One of the calm's origins has pulled a big slab of stone up from the earth to effectively seal it off. Probably Yika, or Cutter before Yika killed him. They were the two others in the calm with the best fine control besides you and Alabaster. Now two of those four are dead, and the enemy is at the gates. The strong backs who are clustered in the tunnel mouth behind the stone seal jump up as you walk into the electric light circle, and the ones who are already standing stand straighter. Zebair, Esni's second in command among the strong backs, actually smiles at the sight of you. That's how bad things are. That's how worried everyone is. They've so lost their minds as to think of you as their champion.
I don't like this, Yika has said to you.
She's back in the calm, organizing the defense that will be necessary if the tunnels are breached. The real danger is if the Renanis scouts discover the ventilation ducts of Kastrima's geode. They're well hidden, one in the cavern of an underground river, others in equally out-of-the-way places, as if the people who built Kastrima feared attack themselves. But the Khan's people will be forced out if those are sealed off.
And they've got Stone Eaters working with them. You're dangerous and Rasta enough to fuck up an army, Essie. I'll give you that. But none of us can fight Stone Eaters. If they kill you, we lose our best weapon.
She says this to you at Scenic Overlook, where the two of you went to work things out. It was awkward for about a day between you. By forbidding a vote, you undercut Yika's authority and destroyed everyone's illusion of having a say in the comms management. That was necessary, you still believe. Everyone shouldn't have a say in whose life is worth fighting for. She actually agreed, she admitted as you talked. But it damaged her. You didn't apologize for that, but you've tried to spackle the cracks. You are Kastrima's best weapon, you said firmly. You even meant it. That Kastrima has lasted this far, a calm of stills who have repeatedly failed to lynch the Ragas openly living among them, is miraculous. Even if hasn't yet committed genocidal slaughter, is a low bar to hop.
Other communities haven't even managed that much. You'll give credit where it's due. It eased the awkwardness between you.
Well, just don't rust and die, she told you at last. Not sure I can keep this mess together without you at this point.
Yika's good at that, making people feel like they've got a reason to do something. That's why she's the head woman. And that is why, now, you walk through a Castrema over that has been turned into a camp by the soldiers of Renonis, and you're actually afraid. It's always harder to fight for other people than for the self. The ash has been falling steadily for a year now, and the calm is knee-deep in the stuff. There's been at least one rain to tamp it down recently, so you can sense a kind of damp mud crust underneath the powdery layer on top. But even that's substantial. Enemy soldiers crowd the porches and doorways of the once-empty houses, watching you. And the untamped ash under the eaves is halfway up most of the houses' walls. They've had to dig out the windows. The soldiers look like just people, because they don't wear uniforms. But there is a uniformity to them nevertheless. They are all fully sunzed or very sunzed looking. Where you can see color in their ash-faded travel clothing, you spot that telltale scrap of prettier, more delicate cloth tied around their upper arms or wrists or foreheads. No longer displaced equatorials, then. They've found a calm. Something older and more primal than a calm. They are a tribe. And now they're here to take what's yours. But beyond that, they are just people. Many are your age or older. You guess that a lot of them are surplus strongbacks or calmless trying to prove their usefulness. There are slightly more men than women, but that follows, too, since most calms are quicker to kick out those who can't produce babies than those who can. But the number of women here means that Renonis isn't hurting for healthy repopulators. A strong calm. Their eyes follow you as you walk down Castrema Over's main street. You stand out, you know, with your ashless skin and clean hair, and your clothes bright with color. Just brown leather pants and unbleached white in your shirt. But these are colors that have become rare in this world of gray streets and gray dead trees and a gray heavily clouded sky. You're the only mid-ladder that you see, too. And you're small compared to most of them. Doesn't matter. Behind you floats the spinal, remaining precisely 1 foot behind the back of your head and turning slowly. You aren't making it do that. You don't know why it's doing that, really. Unless you hold it in your hand, that's what the thing does. You tried to set it down, but it floated back up and moved behind you like this. Should have asked Alabaster how to make it behave before you killed him. Oh, well. Now it's flickering a little, real to translucent to real again, and you can hear, not sess, hear, the faint hum of its energies as it turns. You see people's faces twitch as they notice. They might not know what it is, but they know a bad thing when they hear it. At the center of Castrema Over is a domed open pavilion that Yika tells you was once the Calm's gathering center, used for wedding dances and parties, and the occasional calm-wide meeting. It's been turned into some sort of operations center, you see as you walk toward it. A gaggle of men and women stand, squat, or sit around within it, but one knot of them stands around a freshly made table. When you get close enough, you see that they've got a crudely made diagram of Castrema and a map of the local area side by side, which they are discussing. To your dismay, you can see that they've marked at least one of the ventilation ducts, the one that's behind a small waterfall at the nearby river. They probably lost a scout or two finding it. The river's banks are by now infested with boil bug mounds. Doesn't matter. They found it, and that's bad. Three of the people talking over the maps look up as you approach. One of them elbows another, who turns and shakes awake someone else as you walk into the pavilion and stop a few feet from the table. The woman who gets up, rubbing her face blearily as she comes to join the others, does not look particularly impressive. She's cut her hair on the sides to just above her ears, a painfully blunt chop that looks to have been done with a knife. It makes her look small, even though she's not particularly. Her torso is a smooth barrel, brief breasts blending into a belly that's probably carried at least one child, and legs like basalt pillars. She's not wearing anything more than the others. Her sash of tribe membership is just a fading yellow silk kerchief hanging loosely around her neck. But there's a gravity in her gaze, even half asleep, that makes you focus on her.
Kostrima?
She asks you by way of greeting. It's all that really matters about who you are anyway. You nod. I speak for them. She rests her hands on the table, nodding.
Our message got delivered, then.
Her gaze flicks to the spinal hovering behind you, and something adjusts in her expression. It's not hate that you're seeing. Hate requires emotion. What this woman has simply done is realize you are a Raga and decide that you aren't a person. Just like that. Indifference is worse than hate. Well, you can't muster indifference in response. You can't help but see her as human. Have to make do with hate, then. And what's more interesting is that she somehow knows what the spinal is and what it means. Very interesting. We're not joining you, you say. You want to fight over that? So be it. She tilts her head to one side. One of her lieutenants chuckles into their hand, but is swiftly glared silent by another. You like the silencing. It's respectful. Of your abilities, if not of you per se, and of Kostrima, even if they don't think you have a chance. Even if you actually probably don't have a chance. We don't even have to attack, you realize. The woman says, we can just sit up here, kill anybody who comes up to hunt or trade, starve you out. You manage not to react. We have a little meat. It'll take a while, months at least, for the vitamin deficiencies to set in. Our stores are pretty solid otherwise. You force a shrug. And other communities have gotten around meat shortages easily enough. She grins. Her teeth aren't sharpened, but you think momentarily that her canines are longer than they strictly need to be. It's probably projection.
True, if that's your taste, which is why we're also working on finding your vents.
She taps the map.
Close them up and suffocate you till you're weak. Then break down those barriers you've put across the tunnels and dance right in. Stupid to live underground. Once someone knows you're there, you're actually an easier target, not a harder one.
This is true, but you shake your head. We can be hard enough if you push us. But Kostrima isn't rich, and our store caches aren't any better than those of another comm that's not full of Ragas. You pause for effect. The woman doesn't flinch, but there's a shuffle among the other people in the pavilion as they realize. Good. That means they're thinking. So many easier nuts to crack out there. Why are you bothering with us?
You know why they're really doing this. Because Gray Man's after Origens, who can open the obelisk gate. But that can't be what he's told them. What could induce a strong, stable, equatorial calm to turn conqueror?
Wait, no. It can't be stable. Renonis is relatively close to the rift. Even with living node maintainers, life in such a calm would be hard. Daily blow-throughs of noxious gas, ash fall much worse than here, requiring people to wear masks at all times. Earth help them if it rains, it could be pure acid, and that's if rain is even possible with the rift cranking out heat and ash nearby. Doubtful they have any livestock. So maybe they're facing a meat shortage too.
Because this is what it will take to survive, the woman says to your surprise.
She straightens and folds her arms.
Renanis has too many people for our stores. All the survivors of every equatorial city have come to camp on our doorstep. We would have had to do this anyway, or have problems with too large of a calmless population in the area. Might as well weaponize them into feeding themselves and bringing what's left back home to the calm. You know this season isn't going to end.
It will.
Eventually, she shrugs. Our mests have calculated that if we grow enough shrooms and such and strictly limit our population, we might achieve enough sustainability to survive until the season ends. The odds are better if we take the store caches of every other com we encounter, though. You roll your eyes because you can't help it. You think cache bread's going to last 1,000 years, or 2, or 10, and then a few 100,000 years of ice? She pauses until you're done. And if we set up supply lines from every com with renewables, we'll need some coastal coms with oceanic resources, some Antarctics where growing low-light plants might still be possible. She pauses, also for effect. But you mid-ladders eat too much.
Well,
so basically, you're here to wipe us out. You shake your head. Why didn't you just say so? Why the foolishness about getting rid of the origins? Someone from beyond the pavilion calls, Daniel! And the woman looks up, nodding absently. This is apparently her name. Always a chance you turn on each other. Then we could just walk in and scrape up the leftovers. She shakes her head. Now things have to be hard. The dull, insistent buzz that suddenly impinges itself on her sesapine is a warning as blatant as a scream. It's too late the instant you cess it, because that means you're within range of the Guardian's ability to negate your orogeny. You turn anyway, half-tripping even as you start to spin a huge torus that will flash-freeze the whole rusting town, and it is because you were expecting negation and did not deploy a tight, shielding torus that the disruption knife pegs you in the right arm. You remember Alabaster saying that these knives hurt. The thing is small, made for throwing, and it should hurt, given that it's sunk into your bicep and probably chipping bone. But what Alabaster did not specify, you are irrationally furious with him hours after his death, stupid, useless ruster, was that something about this knife seems to set your entire nervous system on fire. The fire is hottest, incandescent in your sesapine, even though those are nowhere near your arm. It hurts so much that all your muscles spasm at once. You flop onto your side and can't even scream. You just lie there twitching and staring at the woman who steps through the gaggle of Renanis soldiers to grin down at you. She's surprisingly young, or so she seems, though appearances are meaningless because she is a guardian. She's naked from the waist up, her skin shockingly dark amid all these sansids, her breasts small and almost entirely aureola, reminding you of the last time you were pregnant. You thought your tits would never shrink back down after Uche, and you wonder if it will hurt when you are shaken to pieces the way Inan was. Everything goes black. You don't understand what's happening at first. Are you dead? Was it that quick? Everything's still on fire, and you think you're still trying to scream, but you become aware of new sensations then. Movement, rushing, something rather like wind, the touch of foreign molecules against infinitesimal receptors in your skin. It is oddly peaceful. You almost forget your pain. Then light, startling against the eyelids you hadn't realized you'd closed. You can't open them. Someone curses nearby and comes near, and hands press you down, which nearly makes you panic because you can't do orogeny with your nerves exploding like this. But then someone yanks the knife out of your arm. It is as though a shake siren within you has been suddenly silenced. You slump in relief into just ordinary pain and open your eyes now that you can control your voluntary muscles again. Lerna's there. You're on the floor of his apartment. The light is from his crystal walls, and he's holding the knife and staring down at you. Beyond him, Hoa stands in a pose of entreaty, which he must have been directing toward Lerna. His eyes have shifted to you, though he hasn't bothered to adjust the pose. Burning, rusty, fuck! You groan, sigh. And then, because now you know what must have happened, you add, thanks. To Hoa. who pulled you down into the earth and away before the Guardian could kill you. Never thought you'd be grateful for something like that. Lerna's dropped the knife and already turned away to find bandages. You're not bleeding much. The knife went in vertically, paralleling rather than cutting across the tendons, and it seems to have missed the big artery. Hard to tell when your hands are still shaking a little. Shock. But Lerna's not moving at that blurring, near-inhuman speed he tends to use when a life is on the line, so you're encouraged by that. Lerna says, his back to you as he assembles items, I take it your attempt at parley didn't go well. Things have been awkward between you and him lately. He's made his interest clear, and you haven't responded in kind. You haven't rejected him either, though, thus the awkwardness. At one point a few weeks back, Alabaster grumbled that you should just roll the boy already, because you were always crankier when you were horny. You called him an ass and changed the subject, but really? Alabaster's why you've been thinking about it more. You keep thinking about Alabaster too, though. Is this grief? You hated him, loved him, missed him for years, made yourself forget him, found him again, loved him again, killed him. The grief does not feel like what you feel about Uche or Corundum or Inan. Those are rents in your soul that still seep blood. The loss of Alabaster is simply a thinning of who you are. And maybe now is not the time to consider your cataclysm of a love life. No, you say. You shrug off your jacket. Underneath, you're wearing a sleeveless shirt good for Kostrima's warmth. Lerna turns back and crouches and begins swabbing away the blood with a pad of soft rags. You were right. I shouldn't have gone up there. They had a guardian. Lerna's eyes flick up to yours, then back to your wound. I heard they could stop Orogeny. This one didn't have to. That damn knife did it for her. You think you know why, too, as you remember Inan. That guardian didn't negate him, either. Maybe the skin thing only works on Ragas whose Orogeny is still active. That's how she wanted to kill you. But Lerna's jaw muscle is already tight, and you decide maybe he doesn't need to know that. I didn't know about the guardian, Hoa says unexpectedly. I'm sorry. You eye him. I didn't expect Stone Eaters to be omniscient. I said I would protect you. His voice is more inflectionless now that he's not in flesh shape anymore. Or maybe his voice is the same, and you just can't read it as inflectionless because he has no body language to embellish it. Despite this, he sounds angry. With himself, maybe. You did. You wince as Lerna starts winding a bandage around your arm tightly. No stitches, though, so that's good. Not that I wanted to be dragged into the earth, but your timing was excellent. You were hurt. Definitely angry with himself. This is the first time he's sounded to you like the boy he appeared to be for so long. Is he young for one of his kind? Young at heart? Maybe just so open and honest that he might as well be young. I live. That's what matters. He falls silent. Lerna works in silence. Between the collective air of disapproval that the two of them exude, you can't help feeling a little guilty. Afterward, you leave Lerna's apartment to head to Flat Top, where Yika has set up an operations center of her own. Someone's brought the rest of the divans from her apartment, and she set them up in a rough semicircle, basically bringing her council out into the open. In token of this, Hyarka sprawls over one divan as she usually does, head propped on fist, and taking up the whole thing so no one else can sit down. And Tonki is pacing in the middle of the semicircle. There are others around, anxious or bored people who've brought their own chairs or are sitting on the hard crystal floor, but not as many as you would have expected. There's a lot of activity around the comm, you noticed as you headed to the Flat Top. People fletching arrows in one chamber that you pass, building crossbows in another. Down on the ground level, you can see what looks like a long knife-wielding class. A slender young man is teaching about 30 people how to do an over and under strike. Over by Scenic Overlook, some of the innovators seem to be rigging what looks like a dropped rocks trap. The spectators perk up as you and Lerna come onto the flat top, though.
That's hilarious. Everyone knows you volunteered to go topside to deliver Kastrima's answer to Renanis.
You did this, in part, to show publicly that you weren't taking over. Yika's still in charge.
Everyone seems to be reading it as a sign that you may be crazy. But at least you're on their side.
Such hope in their eyes. It dies down quickly, though. That you are back, and that there is a visibly bloody bandage around one arm, is reassuring to no one.
Tonki's in full rant about something, even though she's ready for battle, having traded her skirt for billowy pantaloons, tied her hair up atop her head in a scruffy pile of curls, and strapped twin glass knives to both thighs. She actually looks kind of stunning. Then you pay attention to what she's saying.
The third wave will need to be the most delicate touch. Pressure sets them off, see? A temperature differential should make the wind gust enough, the air pressure drop enough, but it has to happen fast, and no shaking. We're going to lose the forest either way, but shaking will just make them dig in. We need them moving.
I can handle that, Ika says, though she looks troubled. At least, I can handle part of it.
No, it has to be done all at once.
Tonki stops and glowers at her.
That's not rusting negotiable.
She sees you then and stops, her eyes going immediately to the bandage around your arm.
Ika turns and her eyes widen too.
Damn. You shake your head wearily.
I agreed it was worth a shot, and now we know they can't be reasoned with.
Then you sit down, and the people on the flat top fall silent as you impart what intelligence you were able to glean from your trip topside. An army of surplus people occupying the houses, a general named Danel, at least one guardian. Adding this to what you already know, Stone Eaters on their side, a whole city more of them somewhere in the Equatorials, paints a bleak picture. But it is the unknowns that are the most alarming.
How did they know about the meat shortage?
No one seems to be holding the Grey Stone Eater's revelation against Yika, or at least they aren't doing it right now, even though they now know she was keeping the information from them. Headwomen are supposed to make choices like that.
How are they finding the rusting vents?
With enough people, it's not hard to search, you start to suggest, but she cuts you off.
It is. We've been using this geode in one way or another for 50 years. We know the land, and it took us years to find those vents. One's in a damned peat bog further along the river, which stinks to the heavens and occasionally catches fire.
She sits forward, propping her elbows on her knees and sighing.
How did they even know we were here? Even our trading partners have only ever seen Kastrima over.
Maybe they have origins working with them, too, Lerna says.
After so many weeks of hearing mostly Raga, his polite origin sounds strained and artificial to your ears.
They could... No,
says Yika. She looks at you, then.
Kastrima's huge. When you came into the area, did you notice a giant hole in the ground?
You blink in surprise. She nods before you can answer, since your face has said it all.
Yeah, you should have. But something about this place sort of, I don't know, shunts away orogeny. Once you're in it, it's the opposite, of course. The geode feeds on us to power itself. But next time you're topside, and not being almost killed, I mean, try assessing this place. You see what I'm talking about.
She shakes her head.
Even if they've got pet rogas, they shouldn't have known we were here.
Yaka sighs and rolls onto her back, muttering under her breath. Tonki bares her teeth, probably a habit she's picking up from Yaka.
That's not relevant,
Tonki snaps. Because you don't want to hear it, babe, Hyarka says. Doesn't mean it's wrong. You like things neat. Life's not neat. You like things messy. Ika likes things explained, Ika says pointedly.
Tonki hesitates, and Hyarka sighs and says, It's not the first time I've thought there might be a spy in the comm.
Oh, Rust! There's an immediate murmur and shuffle among the people listening.
Lerna stares at her.
That makes no sense, he says. None of us has any reason to betray Kestrema. Anyone taken into this comm had nowhere else to go.
That isn't true.
Hyarka rolls to sit upright, grinning and flashing her sharp teeth.
I could have gone to my mom's birth comm. She was leadership there before she left to go to my birth comm. Too much competition, and she wanted to be a head woman. I left my comm because I didn't want to be head woman after her. Comm full of assholes. But I definitely wasn't planning to live out my useless years in a hole in the ground.
She looks at Yika. Yika sighs in a long-suffering way.
I can't believe you're still mad I didn't ash you. I told you. I needed the help.
Right. But just saying. I wouldn't have stayed if you'd asked me at the time.
You'd rather have some overcrowded equatorial calm with delusions of being old Sansa reborn? Lerna frowns.
I wouldn't. Hyarka shrugs. I like it here now. But I'm saying that somebody else might prefer Renonis. Enough to sell us out for a place in it.
We need to find this spy, shouts someone from over near the rope bridge.
No, you say then, sharply. It's your teacher voice, and everyone jumps and looks at you.
Danelle said she hoped to make Kestrema tear itself apart. We're not starting any Raga hunts here.
This has two meanings, but you're not trying to be clever. You know full well that your teacher voice isn't the only reason everyone's staring at you in palpable unease. The spinal still floats behind you, having followed you down from the surface.
Yika rubs her eyes.
You gotta stop threatening people, Essie. I mean, I know you grew up in the fulcrum and don't really know any better, but it's not good community behavior.
You blink, a little thrown and a lot insulted. She's right. Calms survive through a careful balance of trust and fear. Your impatience is tilting the balance too far out of true.
Fine, you say. Everyone relaxes a little, relieved that Yika can talk you down, and there are even a few nervous chuckles. But I still don't think it's relevant to discuss whether there's a spy right now. If there is, Renonis knows what they know. All we can do is try to come up with a plan they won't anticipate.
Tonki points at you and glares at Hyarka with a wordless see.
Hyarka sits forward, planting a hand on one knee and glaring at all of you. She doesn't usually argue much. That was Cutter's role. But you see stubbornness in the set of her jaw now.
It rusting matters if the spy is still here, though. Good luck keeping them from anticipating if...
The commotion begins at Scenic Overlook. It's hard to see from flat top, but someone's shouting for Yika. She's on her feet at once, heading in that direction, but a small figure, one of the comm's children working as a runner, comes darting along the pathways to meet her before she's even crossed the main bridge from flat top.
Message from the topside tunnels, the boy calls, even before he halts. Says the Rennies are sledgehammering in.
Yika looks at Tonki. Tonki nods briskly.
Marat said the charges were set.
Wait, what? You ask. Yika ignores you. To the child, she says, tell them to fall back and follow the plan. Go! The boy turns and runs off, though only to a point where he's got a clear sight line to Scenic. He holds up a hand, clenches a fist, and then releases it in a splay of fingers. There's a series of whistles throughout the comm as this signal gets relayed, and a lot of bustling as clusters of people gather and head off into the tunnels. You recognize some of them, strongbacks and innovators. You have no idea what's going on. Yika seems remarkably calm as she turns back to face you.
"Going to need your help," she says softly. "If they're using sledgehammers,